Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Games Premier Podcasting Duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined, as always, by my good friend, Mr. JW Kriwal. JW, how's it going today?
Pretty good, Riley. Thanks for having me back on the cast.
It's always a pleasure to have you, JW. Seriously. How are things going on your end, though? What's been the going on as of late?
Well, my baby is really smart. She's learning how to climb now. So she's climbing into her food chair, high chair, which is a little scary, but also I'm just like, she'll bounce. We planted the garden tonight. So we got cucumbers, tomatoes, onions.
Are you going to make any pickles out of those cucumbers?
Yeah, I think we really need to, because last year we ended up just like eating cucumbers that we didn't really want to eat. Like, because cucumbers, surprisingly, are a very fruitful plant.
Really?
In that they produce a lot. They're like, I was really surprised. And it's fun, too, because they get really big. Obviously, it's cucumber, right? So you can, you know, there's a lot of them and they get large and it's just really hard to eat. So we need to get into pickling this year. That's one of my goals, is to at least pickle, you know, a few jars worth of cucumbers, and that way we can have them later.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. So doing that, and then also like canning tomatoes, because we got kind of bad about that too, where we'd like pick some tomatoes and then we wouldn't really utilize them, or we'd use them in a way that wasn't ideal, I guess. It's like, we're making a stir fry, so let's just chop the tomatoes up and throw them in there instead of making a sauce or something like that. So, or a salsa even.
Well, if you're pickling or canning, just make sure you do your research so you don't like give yourself botulism or something.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, people have been canning for a long time. So I'm confident that with my mental skills that I can pickle correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sick. I've been on a little bit of a kickle, if you will, lately. I've been into pickles lately.
Well, I got a pickle right here for you, bud.
Oh yeah, you do. That's really nice of you. Thanks.
Yeah, in about 3 months, probably.
Cool. So. Yeah, I was at the farmer's market with my girlfriend the other week, and I was like, man, I just really want a pickle right now. Do they sell one pickle at any of these stands?
Are you pregnant?
No, Riley. It's just I wanted a pickle. There's nothing wrong with wanting a pickle.
Well, but I never hear people outside of pregnant women talk about
have a craving?
Needing a craving for a pickle. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I don't know. I think what would have done it more than anything for me would have been like fried pickle chips, you know. Ooh. Like the slices. Mm-hmm. That would have fully scratched the itch, but even just a regular pickle would have been fine in that moment.
I see.
Sadly,
I see.
There was no like individual pickles at any of the stands that I saw. So
have you ever had those pickles from convenience stores?
Well, that's kind of
like the single pickle in the juice bag.
No, I haven't, but that's what I was, that's what I was telling Jill about. I was like, hey, these things exist.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, did she not believe you?
I think she did, but she's like, why would they have that here?
Right.
So, it is what it is.
Yeah. So, how have you been, Riley?
I've been good. It's one of our conferences at work right now. So, I've been pretty busy over the last few days, but it's been fun. It's been engaging. Sadly, I have to, like, wear real clothes at the office every day when we have one of our conferences, or at least every day that I'm, like, participating. So, I've had to put the button down on for the last 2 days. I'm taking a break tomorrow and then dress back up on Friday. It's a little bit of an adjustment. I'm glad to be working in an environment that's kind of gone past the dress up for work culture. I think I just prefer being comfortable over, you know, trying to look my best in the office every day. So is what it is, but it's been good. You know, it's been a lot of fun. I had a board game night last week as well. That was fun.
Let's go.
So overall, things are looking good over here.
Sweet, man. Sounds good.
But, you know, there's also plenty going on in the world of Pokemon.
So much.
So much going on in the world of Pokemon. So Today we're going to talk about NAIC, the registration. We're going to talk a little bit about TCG Live and the upcoming sunset of TCGO. We'll talk about some of the cheating allegations and scandals from this past weekend.
I don't even think allegations.
Yeah,
but...
confirmed like cheating instances, if you will, coming out this past weekend. And then we'll wrap up by looking ahead towards Hartford.
Absolutely. Sounds like a full episode.
Definitely. So for those of you who are blissfully unaware, hopefully you're listening to this cast before 10 a.m. Pacific on Thursday, the 18th. The episode should have been released by then. But NAIC registration went live over the course of the day today. We're recording on Wednesday. And it's been quite the debacle, I would say. GW, do you want to describe how it's been?
Well, the way that Pokemon does registration for their big tournaments is they'll open it up at a certain time. And recently they've been doing these waves. So they don't open all the slots at once. They'll open, you know, wave one, wave two, maybe even a wave three, and possibly future waves, depending on if people cancel or not. But they usually schedule out a certain number of waves to guarantee that there's a little bit of a distribution in case, you know, one person can't make a specific time that they open up the registration. So with NAIC registration, they open it up on Wednesday, and wave one filled in about 20 minutes. But the issue with the filling of the wave was that not everyone who was registering actively within those 20 minutes was able to confirm, their registration. So I was reading through the Arcanine explanation of how they actually, open these slots up. And there's actually a little bit of a lottery element to this registration. So even if you're refreshing the page at the right time, you're in early, you're pressing through the different menus and things, there's still a chance that you won't be able to get in just because there's all this traffic hitting that website.
Yeah, I mean, the servers seemed like they were not able to handle the load, and I don't place that like directly on the Arcanine developer. It's a small team, right? It's Carlos and Data at the end of the day. But, like, why does a Pokemon, like, throw some money at them to, like, get another server or a couple servers? That I don't understand.
Yes.
Regardless, so the servers, like, seemed pretty overloaded. I was actually freaking out at the start of registration because I refreshed right on the money. I had, like, a global clock up with down to the seconds, so I refreshed right at 8 Central when it opened. And I realized I didn't click one of the checkboxes, so I was like mashing registration and nothing was happening.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like scrolling me back up to show the box that I missed. I'm like, what is going on? Like, I'm so stressed out. It's like 30 seconds past at this point.
Right.
I scroll up and I just had to check the box, but then I had to go like for the next 5 or so minutes. It was giving me a message like, you know, we weren't able to reserve you a spot, like try again. It didn't say it was full, it said, try again. And after about 5 minutes of that, I was finally able to actually get a spot. But it was, you'd see on Twitter, like, to me, it's like, stay in line. Like, you're still good. I think it's crazy, it's crazy in of itself that the traffic was so high that the site was, like, pushed to its limit. It's crazy that, it had to even have this, like, limit in the first place. It was just kind of a frustrating ordeal. I think you just got to give it your best swing when it comes to these things. And ultimately, when so many people are trying all at once, there's going to be like an element of somewhat randomness to it, right? Like,
yeah,
you can only be so perfect, and the randomness might be on, even if it's not on the RK9 side, maybe it's just how fast your computer sends the signal over to their database and back to you.
Sure.
Like, all those little things add up, right? And so there's just going to be elements that are out of your control, even if you do it, like, as perfectly as you possibly can. Which, I would love to have a world where we could just fully accommodate everybody who wanted to attend, but venue space is expensive, and it looks like maybe Pokemon isn't trying to upscale beyond what they've scheduled out for NAIC already. So
right, yeah, it definitely does seem like that. Yeah, the first wave was about 1250 across all divisions.
Yeah,
and you know, I think subsequent waves usually tend to be a little bit smaller. So
yeah, for UIC, I think they were about equal across the three waves, but wave two for NAIC, I think, was smaller. I think it was about half as much. So if someone, you can fact check me on the numbers, but I think they're clocking in at like 1800-1900 right now. So probably like in the 2300-2400 if wave three is similar to wave two.
Yep. It's just, it is really interesting. I ended up from that first wave not getting in, and I was a little bit concerned because I was sitting there. I was like, I had two browser tabs open. I was refreshing both. I had my browser on my phone open because I was thinking like, oh my gosh, I, you know, maybe it's like a computer issue. So I had, you know, the browser on the phone going, and yeah, after about 15 minutes, I, you know, was like, okay, well, this is not happening. I, you know, I went down to like one browser, and then I saw that, of course, everything was all full. And so I went to Arcanine. They have some statements on why that may have been happening, because I had, you know, again, three browsers open trying to get in. But they say, when handling a request, this is a quote from Arcanine, when handling a request, the system attempts to allocate a specific available spot to a player. So if they had 1200 slots open, then every incoming request they assign to presumably a number, you know, a spot. And then further on down, they say to ensure data integrity and avoiding overselling, the database can only permit one of those people to get a spot. So if you have more people trying to register than are slots available, then you're going to have this kind of weird overlap. And ultimately, it's just kind of luck of the draw who gets chosen, apparently. So I was able to get in on the second wave fairly easily, which was quite a relief, because it just, oh, wow, it feels really bad to wait till the last wave to get your registration in. But was able to get there, and we'll be playing at NAIC.
And I also was able to make it in that first wave, as I alluded to earlier. So both of us will be there, and we'd be excited to meet any of you who are able to make it in. If you haven't made it in yet and you're listening to this on Thursday morning, please, you know, give it your best shot. Usually the waves do get a little bit easier, the subsequent ones, as time goes on. So hopefully you can get that slot as we approach the 2,000 player mark across all age divisions. If I had to guess, I think this tournament will be not substantially larger than like Charlotte was and Orlando were, around that like 1500 player mark. Maybe we climb up to 16, low 1700s. But I don't think we're going to get like the 2000 person master event that people were maybe speculating about. Just based on registration limits, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think demand is not there.
Yeah.
Certainly. But it does seem to be a, you know, a smaller cap than I think many of us would have thought.
Yeah. We also did get announcements that the pop-up shop will be at NAIC and available to the public. So you don't have to necessarily be registered as a player to be able to attend there. So
did you end up going to the one in London?
You know, I actually didn't. I had a slot available, but it was on Sunday, because I was unconfident in my ability to swing by during the rounds of play.
Gotcha.
And I was really confident I was going to make day two. So I slotted myself for Sunday. And Zeely and company went a little bit earlier than me on Sunday. And at that point, everything was already sold out that was like IC exclusive. So I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to use the slot. And
yeah,
I didn't go. But I did have the opportunity to. And I'll definitely try and check it out at NAIC, because I do like some of the things they have there, like the double deck boxes I would maybe want to pick up one or two of, and some of the other merch. I also have folks at work who won't be going to these large tournaments who like the merch. So
right,
maybe pick some up for friends.
Right. Yeah, I definitely wanted the UIC stuff, exclusive stuff, because it looked cool with all the EVs.
I think it'll likely be the same stuff. It was
just with a different.
None of it was really branded. None of the Pokemon Center stuff, at least, was really branded around a UIC. It was just like the continuation. It was like the sister collection of, you know, what you get by registering, right? Like it's the EV branded merch, but none of it was like stamped UIC or anything. So it'll probably be very similar, if not the same stuff at NAIC.
Sure.
And it is cool. It is very nice looking. So Pokemon merch game always coming in strong. So,
but you know what is not coming in strong?
What's that, JW?
The new client, TCG Live.
Yeah. So I've been a little in my feels about TCG Live lately. I think there's a multitude of things that kind of spurred it on. The sunset date for TCGO is only a few weeks away now. So it's kind of looming over us. Also, TCGO isn't really supported anymore anyway. So, you know, it's kind of in our rearview mirror at this point.
Mm-hmm.
General frustration with playing the game. And then also this most recent patch, which has been really tough on the game. And, yep. You know, I was texting Andrew Andrew Mahone, and he has historically said that the Pokemon trading card game Live is a brand damaging game, right? And I love Andrew, but sometimes he can say things that are a little inflammatory, a little up in your face. And I'm like, you know, we'll give it a swing, right? We'll see what happens, and it'll probably be fine. And I think I've just become a little bit disillusioned about it. I'm not going to lie, JW. And I'd be curious for your experiences as well. But I think it was the combination of those factors, you know, playing the game and playing Gardevoir, for example, and having to sit through every single energy attachment and watching the damage pump on there. Not being able to cancel an action once you start it until you, like, for example, if you do Psychic Embrace, you have to do one energy. You can't, like, click into it and then cancel it.
Mm-hmm.
The random moments where you just can't select a valid target for a card, which happens, it feels like, on, like, 1 out of 5 deck searches. It just is really frustrating to play. And then this latest patch almost felt like things got worse instead of getting better. And I play primarily online. You know, none of my friends, none of my close, like, testing partners live in proximity to me. And even then, like, I kind of like grinding the ladder, just throwing games mindlessly.
Sure.
And I can't really do that on TCG Live. You know, the fact there's no ability to turn off match timer in friend games, so like you're under the clock when playing test games with your friends. The fact that the ladder just feels bad to play and the game feels bad to play, and it makes me a little upset, I think, as someone who plays mostly online, because I'm struggling to see like how to meaningfully engage with the game to the same degree that I was able to with TCGO.
Yeah, definitely. I think you hit on there where it's like the hierarchy for me is playing in person, right? That's like the best way, in my opinion, to enjoy the game. And then underneath that would be to have an automated client that can take out some of the manual labor of playing the game, right? That can shuffle the deck, that can attach the energy, you know, move cards around, etc., right? Make it an enjoyable experience in that way. And then I personally don't love doing you know, any of the, although they're great tools, but using, you know, Limitless, for instance, or playing webcam, just I don't know, it's, it just feels kind of, it's just not my preferred way to do it. So yeah. You know, I definitely feel you on that, though. It's like, well, if you can't play in person, then PTCGO/PTCG Live is the next best thing. But if that game just can't handle the demands of the format and the demands of the cards, then where does that leave you?
Right. And I think, like, you know, I made a silly tweet the other day about, oh, I wish there was a way to play Pokemon cards virtually. And you know, I got some like semi-valid responses, like, oh, just do screen share Limitless, or oh, try like some of these other tools, like these other web-based tools that you kind of have to do the actions manually, but you know, it's still a thing. And I guess my response to that is twofold. Is first, like, that's not super fun or engaging. Like, it's maybe a valuable tool, but it's not like a, it doesn't feel like a great use of my time, so to speak.
Right.
And then second is friends aren't going to be available to use the, those tools sort of implicitly require like two people in communication on both ends of the line.
Sure.
Right. And so if the friends are unavailable for whatever reason, they, maybe I just want to play games at midnight on a Friday. And like, I just want to roll some games. You can't really do that, right? You can't do that on the Limitless like deck shuffle tool. You can't do that on Tabletop Simulator, on some of these other simulators. No, like, you want to queue up a ladder on a real client. And frankly, like, that's not something I want to do on TCG Live. I haven't opened the app in several days now, and I really gave it what I thought was a fair swing. I played a couple hundred games on the client, and it's just unsatisfying. I don't know. And it makes me genuinely upset, because I don't think anybody wants to like the game more than I do. I love playing TCGO. I grinded so many games on it over the course of my time as a player. I have fond memories of playing it in, you know, lobbies of hotels while on trips with my family, of playing it on my iPad between classes in college. And like, I could never justify doing that. Like, I can't even bring myself to like open TCG Live on the weekend, because it's it's not fun.
Yep.
Which is sad, because I think the meta is in like a more interesting and fun place than it has been in a while.
Oh, 100%.
And like, the game itself is cool and fun, but the online experience is miserable.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, it's just so buggy and frustrating. I mean, it's better than nothing. yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know. I find myself saying that. I'm like, well, why do I have to say that? But, it is better than nothing. And to some degree, it's workable, but it can just be so frustrating to run into those game-breaking bugs multiple times in a testing session. And it happens, right? It's not like, well, oh, maybe you can avoid it. But it's like, no, you know, you go run the ladder, and it's, you know, you probably play half an hour, 45 minutes. You probably hit two bugs that are significant, at least, and just makes for a really disappointing experience.
Yeah, it sucks. I don't know. And I think maybe the part that sucks most of all is TCGO is about to be like completely nixed. Like, we're taking it out back and getting rid of it. And it feels like TCG Live hasn't really meaningfully improved over the course of its life cycle so far. Right. So like, what does that actually mean for going forward?
Right.
And I
don't
think it spells good things.
Well, that's a big point too, is like, well, the game's been out for a while now, and you know, certainly in the last 6 months, I have seen like a steady neutral on its improvement, and maybe potentially a decline on the development of the game. And that just, it's scary to be behind, because of course every 2 to 3 months we're getting new cards. So, you know, if there are ingrained issues that have not been solved, then they just get pushed on to the next release that's going to happen, to the next release that's going to happen, you know, and it's just going to compound on itself.
Yeah.
So I do worry about that as well.
Yeah. So I don't know. I won't belabor the point forever, but it makes me frustrated, and I think it is a brand damaging client. You know, I've come around to agree, and I don't think I could tell my friends to like play who don't really play the Pokemon trading card game as deep ingrained of a hobby as I do. I couldn't show them TCG Live, be like, hey, check this out. Like, do you want to play some games with me? Like, no, that would be an embarrassment, honestly. No. So, is what it is, I guess. But, and certainly if you enjoy TCG Live, like, no hate towards you or anything. It's just frustrating for me.
Yeah, absolutely. But speaking of embarrassment,
And frustrating.
And frustration. We have another cheating scandal.
Woo! Yeah.
Sound the alarms. Wee wee wee. We got a cheater. This happened at the Bogota special event, where the finalist, and what's crazy to me is that there were multiple matches that he was streamed where he was recorded doing the same exact shuffling cheat. Essentially, what Eder Irio was able to do was keep the top card on the top of his deck, I don't know that the opponent cut in certain instances, or he was able to kind of delay the cut to a point that the opponent forgot. It was one instance that it looked like, but
well, I think there was also an instance where he was shuffling the opponent's deck.
Right.
And every time he saw like a brick card, he would move it to the top. Right. And like his opponent didn't cut the deck after Ader shuffled it. So he just drew all bricks. Which is so insane.
That's pretty good. It's a good strat, I'd say.
Yeah.
In some ways. But yeah, oh my gosh. So Eder Irio, man, please be embarrassed. I don't know that this player has been banned yet, but certainly should be for their actions over the course of the tournament. And I mean, to do it twice on stream, I mean, you got to think about the integrity of his entire rounds. Like that, I can't imagine that this wasn't happening every single round for this player.
Yeah, and then now people are like digging up receipts of prior incidents with this guy. It almost makes you wonder how like it gets this far before, because I feel like every time there's like a super obvious cheat like this, people just come out of the woodwork and be like, "Oh yeah, like you did this, this, and this, and this, and this." I was like, "Where were you?"
Yeah, right, right.
Were you just waiting for like this to be 100% confirmed? They're gonna drop all your baggage. I guess yes is the answer. But, you know, hopefully Pokemon takes action. It feels like they've been pretty lackadaisical on taking actions on cheaters. But this feels really cut and dry to me. Maybe more so than some of the other accusations that have been flying around as of late. Mm-hmm. So I'd hope to see action. If not, then please shuffle both his and cut your deck if you happen to play against Ader. It seems like the least you could do to protect yourself. And friendly reminder for those of you who aren't aware, you can shuffle your opponent's deck, obviously, like when they present it to cut, which you should try and do at least a portion of the time. But also if your opponent shuffles your deck, you do have the option to cut it. You can't like reshuffle it again, but you can cut it. Yeah. And final friendly reminder is the cut is one single cut of a deck. If you are doing multiple cuts, that's a shuffle technically.
May I also give a friendly reminder?
Please.
Okay, Riley, you've had your friendly reminders. I will give my friendly reminder. The deck should not be shuffled within kind of eyesight of either player, right?
What I mean is
like you shouldn't be shuffling, or your opponent shouldn't be shuffling your deck right in front of you, right? Looking at the deck. That, you know, usually when I'm shuffling, I will kind of, you know, tilt my head to one side, and then I have the deck on the other side. So it's like there's no ambiguity that I could be looking at the deck, right? Like it's two separate places, not on the same plane of vision. So
yeah, that's a great point.
That is like something that I see. I don't see this from too many American judges. I feel like when I've been played like maybe larger events, or played, I remember this in the special event that I played in Spain, where there was, you know, judges constantly reminding, hey, make sure you're not looking at your deck, you know, to me and to other players, just when you're shuffling, like they wanted to make sure that there was no kind of ambiguity about where you're looking. And so that's another thing. You see your opponent like straight up looking at your deck, just be like, hey, man, you know, call them out on it, right? It's like, I think that's the least you can do there. So if not, get a judge involved.
Yeah. I think maybe overarching is, I don't know if defensively is the right word, but like play defensively, right? Like set yourself up in situations where you're not going to be screwed over by stuff like this.
Yeah, just assume your opponent's cheating. I mean, and it's kind of a bad thing to like, you don't want to look down.
Yeah, I was basically trying to say that in a nicer way. Right,
exactly.
So, what are your opinions on SPEs, JW, before we go into the break?
Oh, you know, I think they're a great time for, you know, if you're not from the country that the special event is happening.
How about we just go right to the break? So, JW, what's your card of the day for this week?
Card of the day for today. I was looking through some of the old vending series cards, and these are always like, I feel like some of the Japanese exclusives from like the vending series or the VS series,
mm-hmm.
Were cards that I just like really want, but, and they're not particularly expensive, but I'm just like not going out of my way to collect them. Like I'm not like collecting these cards, but you know, maybe if they show up at a trade show or something, or somebody's binder or something, I try to get my hands on it. But there's one in particular that really caught my eye. I was like, wow, this is a really unique artwork. It has kind of a monotone single palette, like single color palette, mm-hmm. for the art, and just in a, I don't know, a bit of a unique kind of older style of artwork. I don't quite know how to describe it, but just kind of that ancient art, I suppose. The card of the day for today is a vending series 3 Japanese Omanite.
Ooh.
That it's just, I can't, you know, if you're not looking at it right now, I can't really describe it to you. I'll probably post to the Twitter you know, on Friday, but it just has a very kind of soothing look to it. It's very unusual, I would say, in its art style, but I think very appropriate for an Omanite.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I just pulled it up. He's so nice.
Yeah, he's a cute little card. So if you didn't know about these Japanese vending series, you know, they do some cool things with cards in Japan, especially towards, you know, the beginning of Pokemon. They had a lot of really interesting, unique cards and gimmicks with the cards, and this is one of those vending series cards.
That's really cool.
Yeah. If you're thinking about a Christmas present.
For you or for anybody?
For me.
Okay.
I mean, this one's like $5 or something.
That's cool. Yeah, the vending cards are all really interesting, and a lot of them weren't released internationally. Maybe none of them. Were there any that came out internationally? Do you know?
I mean, I can't think off the top of my head. Surely there were, or with different arts or something, but
yeah.
You know, I can't think of any off the old dome.
Very cool. Yeah, many of these cards were not released outside of Japan. Of those that were, all of them were Black Star promos distributed at Pokemon Leagues. Cool. Yeah, I really like the vending Porygon, the one that's in the city.
You know, yeah, that one's pretty cool too.
Porygon has a lot of fun cards.
Porygon does, yes.
It also has cool Porygon, which
I mean, yeah.
Amazing cards.
So true.
Cool. Well, JW, while you're on a roll here, why don't you go ahead and introduce our sponsor for this week?
Absolutely. The presenting sponsor of the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast is Manscaped. We're so thankful to be partnering with Manscaped to provide you with, you know, some discounts to be able to get some of their fantastic products. They are by far the premier men's grooming company. They have all the needs that you could ever want, things from ranging from their shampoos, conditioners, body washes, all the mechanical tools that you might need, weed whacker, the a lawnmower 4.0, all of the things that you could possibly need to make sure that you're looking, feeling, and smelling your best.
Yeah, Manscaped products are seriously top-of-the-line stuff. I love every single thing that I've been able to use and try from their lineup. Most recently, I've used the Beard Hedger to, as the name implies, hedge my beard. You know, I was getting a little scraggly. I hadn't shaved in about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and it cleaned me right up. It's super nice, pain-free. I really like it. I like how it's adjustable, super easy to use, and I'm feeling all nice and fresh now. That, of course, is comparable to my love for the Manscaped Boxers 2.0, which, if you've been a fan of the cast, then you know they carry with them legendary Pokemon tournament powers that are more likely to give you a day two. The stats don't lie, so there's enough evidence that if you want to believe the Boxers give you a day two, you can believe that. Legally, you can do that.
So true.
So, so legally, you can believe it if you want to. And that's all I'll say on the matter. So.
Yeah, we're not telling you to in any way.
But if you want to, it's okay to think that. So just to make that clear. So Manscaped products are really excellent, though. Top to bottom. And the great news is that you can use code TAGTEAM at checkout to get 20% off and free shipping. I know I hate paying for shipping and handling. Even if it's insignificant, it really annoys me. And that's in addition to a 20% discount out of the box. So you gotta try it out. Head on over to manscaped.com, use TAGTEAM at checkout, and I promise you won't regret your purchase.
Absolutely. Say screw it to shipping. Code tag team at checkout over at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping.
Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. And thank you to all of you who are listening for checking them out. Okay, JW, as of recording this, it is Wednesday, the 17th of May. We got Hartford coming up just weekend. Another regional in the Scarlet and Violet format. I remembered the name of the format this week, so kudos to me. What do we think is going to be going down as we head into Hartford this weekend?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think decks that are on the rise are Lost Zone decks and Arceus decks, most notably Arceus Giratina. I think these two decks, you know, we've been seeing more players feel confident playing them in late nights, obviously have been doing well in you know, the most recent tournaments. So those decks to me seem like decks that would be on my radar if I were going. I'm not going to be going to Harvard, so, you know, what do I care? No, it's not anything like that, but it's more so just these are the decks that, you know, if people are going, I would say, hey, you know, and they had no idea what to play, consider a Lost Zone deck, consider an Arceus deck.
I think that's super fair, right? Both of those decks are really consistent. Both of those decks have a lot going for them right now. Arceus leaning more into sort of the disruption and tankiness, and Lost Zone leaning into the explosive power of Mirage Gate and Sableye. JW, if you were considering playing a Lost Zone deck this weekend, what would it look like?
Good question. I would probably play the Charizard variant.
Interesting.
I think that one is more my pace in the sense that you're going, you know, you have some elements of like a quote-unquote turbo build where you're just trying to go through the deck as fast as possible. You have a lot more switch outs than some of the other Lost Zone box decks. You're still playing, you know, these Lost Vacuums and such so that you can really quickly get to four or 7 or 10. I guess 7 is not really a number that you necessarily need in the Charizard box, but 4 or 10.
But you could get there.
You could. Well, 7 is a number that you need to hit before you hit 10.
Exactly. You can hit 7, 8, and 9. If you...
So true. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, the numbers.
11, 12.
Yeah, why stop there? So in any case, that's kind of my preference. It's a little bit I don't want to say like lower to the ground, but you do have significantly less decisions to make. And that's not necessarily something that I'm saying like, oh yes, this is a good thing.
But for someone like you.
But for someone like me, you know, again, we're talking about counting from, you know, 7 to 12 here. that's always welcome.
For sure. Yeah, I think I would dissent from you there. I think I would definitely lean into more of a Dragonite, Forest Seal Stone, Sableye type of build with the Mirage Gates. That's what I have the most reps with personally, and that's what I feel the most comfortable with. I think there's pros and cons to each style, right? I don't think there's one that's objectively better than the other. But I personally prefer the Mirage Gate variants. I really love Greninja. I think that's maybe the biggest selling point for me is Greninja's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good card to be able to have you know, attacking access to. So certainly can't go wrong there. In terms of matchups with the Turbo Lost Box list versus Lost Box Charizard, are there any that you look at as being notably better or notably worse that would cause you to maybe, you know, choose one over the other?
Not necessarily. I think the Turbo, like, Mirage Gate variants are going to be a little bit better into, like, Lugia, for example, because they are a little bit more aggressive and they have a higher early to mid damage ceiling. So whereas Charizard is kind of reliant on getting to the late game, which if the game gets too late versus Lugia, you probably already lost.
Right. Right.
So, that's one thing I think is worth considering, but I think generally, like, they're putting up relatively similar matchups, right? Like you're feeling good against your Guardies. You're feeling good against your Mews. Some of the other decks are a little closer. So I think to some degree it's a matter of preference. I personally vibe more with the box variants, and I think the box variants generally post EUIC have been seeing more success, which may be a factor in your own personal decision. But I wouldn't fault someone for playing Charizard, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, because these Lost Box decks feel like they've kind of hit their crest in terms of matchup, preferred matchups, I guess. Because obviously, like, if more people are trying to play Lost Zone because they think it's, you know, a good deck, then you're going to be hitting more mirrors, and those are kind of washes at the end of the day. So sure, there are some things you can, you know, certainly do to take advantage in the mirror. But what I mean to say is, when everyone was playing Gardevoir, or when Gardevoir was a top three played deck, Lost Box seemed like a natural kind of, you know, not necessarily counter pick, but it had a great Gardevoir matchup. So, you know, if you're playing 2-3 Gardevoir in a tournament, those are essentially free wins for you. Now that's really not been the case. Gardevoir has largely fallen off from kind of, I don't know, a month ago where it was one of the most played decks.
So I guess let's maybe shift gears and talk about Gardevoir a little bit, right? So one of the big selling points for Lost Zone is its favorable matchup into Gardevoir, which was almost certainly a large factor in Lost Zone's success in the Gardevoir-riddled metagame over in Portland. With Gardevoir sort of on the downturn in the fallout from Portland, how do you think that will shake things up? Does Gardevoir all of a sudden become a good player? Do you think Lost Zone is now oppressively popular for the deck?
Yeah, I would say the second there. I think Lost Zone has really captured a lot of players, hearts and minds, their dreams, certainly. As just kind of people are very comfortable playing Lost Zone from last format, and, you know, not a ton has changed, and now you just have generally solid matchups overall, and I would just say that, yeah, it's not something that I could see declining in popularity.
So then what are we looking at then? If it's going to be a Lost Zone riddled metagame, what is the answer to that? You know, how do you get a step ahead of what's coming?
That's another good question. I think that there are certain things that some of the other main decks try to do against Lost Box. And I think one of the big cards right now is Judge. And we see a lot of the non-Lost Box decks relying heavily on Judge. You think about Arceus Giratina, you're playing four Judge. You think about Mew Genesect, they're playing at least three Judge. You know, Lugia Archeops is maybe not as Judge reliant as those other two, but certainly looking to play Judge into the Lost Zone Box matchup, or cards like Penny, you know, they certainly have other, or, you know, just one prizers in general into Lost Box. So, like, they have a few other strategies, but also, you know, Hand Disruption, right, into those Lost Zone Box decks. So that to me feels like the, you know, outside of playing Lost Zone decks, like if you're going to have any shot against them, it's being able to Judge at the right times.
Yeah, I think that's fair in general, but, you know, I'm just scrolling through matchups right now from the last late night, and it feels like the Lost Zone decks have been pretty resilient against the main offenders there. You know, you look at Arceus Giratina, probably is the prime offender of of Judge spam. And the matchup seems pretty fine for Lost Box. I would almost feel like into a metagame that centralizes around Lost Box plus other, you know, that Lugia feels like a pretty good choice. Lugia feels like it has a decent Lost Box matchup, like certainly acceptable. And it is relatively good against the random stuff that is just spamming Judge. You know, it just has to basically survive the one turn, and if you can get out of that one turn and get your chops down, like, you're chilling. So I almost wonder if Lugia kind of loops around to being a really, really solid choice heading into Hartford.
Is there anything you would do to the Lugia deck? Any way you would play it for this meta?
Not necessarily. I'm not sure if the Urshifu is necessary in this tournament. I guess I wouldn't fault someone for playing it, but I think you can probably get away without it. And otherwise, just playing a relatively standard-looking deck, you know, three urns, three or four research, couple boss, a couple Serena, and you're probably chilling, right? I think play the Serena this event, you know, try and take your wins against Lost Box where you can, and make a show of it.
Yeah, for sure. I like Lugia a lot in this format.
Yeah,
I think it's a really, really strong deck still. I mean, it has, and we've talked about this, just if you can choose, you know, your ideal kind of game plan with Lugia, your ideal board state, I think it just has the best board state of any deck in the format, maybe save for Gardevoir, you know, being able to swing for like 300 plus on a one prizer is pretty decent. yeah, I think, you know, Lugia just has that high power level. If you're, I don't know that you should be ever be worried about playing Lugia, because it's been resilient enough. It's shown through these tournaments that it can come back. Like, if people are like, oh, I, you know, I hate playing such a coin flip deck, oh, my Mezzagozas never go the right, oh, I always, you know, my Capturing Aromas, I never get what I want to, and it's like, well, it's like, well, you know, I do feel like there's been, you know, certainly enough results that we can confidently put that argument to rest.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you're gonna flip some coins, but that doesn't mean that your deck is just completely high roll either, right? Like,
right.
The deck is built to do its thing, and sometimes it'll fail, and that's fine. It failed when Evolution Incense was in format, so like, it happens. Yeah, I think Lugia sticks out to me as maybe a really good choice for this weekend. You know, and Lugia feels like it's just amassing more and more tricks over and more things that can slot in to make matchups better. Yeah. So I think that would be my personal pick as of Wednesday. So
yeah, and I think too, if the format narrows down even more, I mean, you see this like higher share, the Lost Zone decks just keep climbing. It seems to be about, you know, 20-25% of any given metagame, be it in-person tournaments or online. So you know, just as the meta shrinks a bit, Because it is still pretty wide open, but you're more able to tech for the matchups that you expect to see. For instance, you were talking about the, you know, maybe you wouldn't really play the Urshifu, single strike Urshifu. And I think that's pretty fair because you look at the decks that it would be really good against. Gudra, not a particularly high amount in the meta right now. You look at Arceus Duraludon. I think the premier Arceus deck right now is Giratina. So if you can confidently cross off those matchups as being matchups you might see one of throughout the course of a tournament, then that opens up some slots to be a little bit trickier in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So, what about, well, I kind of feel like Mew is still really good.
I just haven't cared for Mew in post-rotation pretty much at all. It doesn't mean it's not good. I just, as someone who played so much Mew pre-rotation, it just feels icky now.
It's funny because I almost feel, I don't know, I feel in some ways it's a little bit smoother than a lot of the other decks that I play.
Compared to other decks in post-rotation, you're saying?
Yeah, in post-rotation, right. Like, I'm very confident with the Mew deck about getting a turn to attack. I'm much less confident with pretty much any other deck about getting that turn to attack, save for maybe Arceus.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mew is probably a solid choice. You got Judge Spam, which is good. You know, it's going to be the deck that, one of the decks that's the most effective at just spamming those judges turn after turn. And you got just the general firepower of Mew behind you, and if anything, Drapion stocks are at a low right now, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. So if there's probably a time, Hartford is a good time to do it. I don't know if I would sleeve it up personally, but I see what you're saying. Like, it feels like it's well poised.
Yeah, I mean, I would worry about a competent Lost Box player with Kyogre. Right, because that's the issue with Kyogre versus Drapion is that you can punish Drapion very hard with Roxanne, right? So in some cases, you almost kind of hope that your Loxbox opponent plays the Drapion because you can knock it out for a couple prizes, Roxanne them, and then potentially even Echo Horn it back and knock it out later in the game, right? Yeah. So there are some big advantages. Exactly. There are some big advantages for the Mew player that Lost Box decks choose to play Drapion. When Lost Box decks, you have a competent player that they're playing the Kyogre and they're able to generate that end of game Kyogre attack. I mean, that is so big for the deck because it means that they only have to take two prizes over the course of those first 6-7 turns. And then they can come in with their Kyogre and just clean up without being affected by Roxanne. Now, of course, they still have Judge. You still might have to make those awkward choices off of the comb fees, but you certainly have a bigger hand to work with in aggregate because the worst that the Mew can do to you is Judge you as opposed to Roxanne.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the recent results, and by and large, it seems like Mew has a pretty good matchup spread. The things it doesn't like are Lost Zone Box with Mirage Gate and Arceus Giratina.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I think those two enough would be enough to dissuade me from those two alone would be enough to dissuade me from playing the deck, even if every other matchup is favorable. But
well, so the thing about it, I don't mean to speak too much about this, but the thing about into Arceus Giratina is like it does feel like a 50-50 matchup. If you go if you go first, you probably win because you're going to snipe down, you know, their Arceus, right, on that second turn. If they don't get two out, then they're screwed. Alternatively, if you're the Arceus player and you get the first attack and you get the first path, you know, and you get the first judge, like, that is very hard for Mew to get out from under. So that matchup to me has felt very much like a swing matchup of who wins coin flip, and if they do, you know, the win rate has to be just insane for that, at least from what I've played.
I'm sure that's a pretty big swing. I feel like Arceus Giratina is probably more likely to win going second than Mew is, would be my assumption.
Sure.
Especially with the V-Guard energies.
Well, so that's another thing, Mew. I've been kind of thinking about the, you know, the fan of waves as just being another insurance policy into
the return of the fan.
Well, because you have, I mean, yeah. You think about the energy split in Arceus Giratina, which completely makes sense, but you have 6 special energy versus 8 basics, right? And of course, you're going to run into those times with Arceus Giratina where you can lay the, you know, the basic energy first and then follow that up with the double turbo. But with that split being the way it is, there's going to be plenty of games where your only energy attachment is a special, and potentially Mew can, you know, kind of delay.
I think that's totally valid. Like, having a fan would be helpful in that matchup and sort of help with the mitigating the going second.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's valid. So I guess really you're just contending with, does Lost Zone Box with Mirage Gate scare you enough?
Nah, maybe a little bit. I have been really wanting to play a Lost Zone deck for a tournament. So I have a back-to-back doubleheader cup weekend coming up. So I may give Lost Zone Box a run.
So I guess when push comes to shove, if we both had to say our deck choice, what would yours be, JW? Would it be Mew?
It would be Lost Box Charizard, I think, right now. That would be the deck that I've been running the most online, but Fallback would be Mew right now. I think that's you know, the deck that I know the best, and like you were saying, has relatively good matchups across the board outside of, I think, competent Lost Box players, although I haven't lost to many of those either in person or on the ladder. So
yeah, I think mine would probably be Lugia with a Fallback to Lost Zone with Mirage Gate. But I can totally see your perspective. It's a wide, I think, you know, it's always a good Fallback. It's like, it's a wide enough metagame that
yes,
kind of anything 100%. Can happen.
I mean, this does feel like a solid metagame in the sense that you can take a deck that you like,
yeah,
and if you know the matchups in and out, like, you're probably gonna have a decent day, right? It's not like last format,
yep,
where you had Lugia dominating and it was just like, can you beat Lugia? No, this is much wider, to the point that I think you could pretty much bring any deck, and it's like, okay, yeah, as long as you know your matchups and,
yeah,
you know, you play, you know, maybe some techs for certain things, you're probably going to be fine.
Totally agree. So best of luck to all of you going to Hartford. Neither of us will be there, but we will be at Milwaukee later this year. So look out for us there. And we both made it into NAIC.
Let's go.
So I think that brings us to a pretty good close here. Talked about a lot of stuff today. I'm excited to see what happens this weekend in Hartford. I'll be watching from home. I'm sure you'll be watching the results as they come up, JW. But we're going to head out for today. So before we leave, please do check us out on social media. We are very active there across our accounts. So you can follow the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon. You can follow myself at Smiles with Riles. And you can follow JW at Real John Walter. And if you're interested to see any of our live streams, either of the podcast or otherwise, you can find my channel at twitch.tv/Munner. And you can find JW's at twitch.tv/FlexDaddyRighteous. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you next time. Peace.
See you.